Rick Sanchez here. This is Direct Impact, and this is what we're going to be talking about.
And also former Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard. Both are former progressive Democrats who have embraced Trump and also leaned increasingly into conspiracy theories in recent years.
Conspiracy theory. Why is ABC News calling Tulsi Gabbard, just a regular news report, a conspiracy theorist? I'm going to tell you why. I'm Rick Sanchez. Let's do this thing. So we're going to begin the show today with the great debate. Maybe great, maybe not. Donald Trump has said that he agrees to go ahead with the original time and place that he had scheduled with President Biden. But of course, Biden's role will now be played by Vice President Kamala Harris. It's going to happen Tuesday, September 10th on ABC, television network that Mr. Trump is accusing of being biased against him. Ironically, in this report, the very thing they do when they do this report, announcing this debate, they seem to prove him right.
It comes this morning as his campaign is highlighting the two former Democrats have joined the Trump transition team. RFK Jr. coming over just days after he dropped out of the race and endorsed Trump, and also former Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard. Both are former progressive Democrats who have embraced Trump and also leaned increasingly into conspiracy theories in recent years.
Yeah, they're into conspiracy theories. They're nutcases. They're crazy people. I mean, what? I mean, it's almost like they can't help themselves. I mean, look, it's perfectly fair to criticize Tulsi Gabbard. You could criticize her for her anti-war positions. Fine, if you have a different opinion, you could explain that. But to suggest that she's some kind of conspiracy nut, that's biased reporting. There's no question about that. I don't know, Manila. When I saw that, I just kind of like jumped out of my chair. I said, really? And it wasn't like they were doing a bio on her or anything. It was just a regular report announcing this debate.
And just a comment, you know, that she's a conspiracy theorist and whack job or whatever. But obviously, Rick, all of mainstream media takes a biased slant, either to the red team or to the blue team.
Yeah.
Outside of Fox or OAN, there really aren't any networks that cater to conservatives. ABC, I would say, falls squarely in line with the Democratic Party talking points. And when it comes to Tulsi Gabbard, I mean, the fix has been in against Tulsi since she threw her hat in the ring in the 2020 election cycle. They called her a Putin puppet and an Assad apologist, now a conspiracy theorist. And I don't think the audience even needs me to outline how ABC has framed Donald Trump over the years. I'm not sure they've ever uttered a kind word about him over any of the years at ABC. Nobody, not even a guest. So he is correct in his skepticism over the network hosting the upcoming debates that they probably aren't going to be very kind to him.
You know what I think it is, too? I've always said this. Bad reporting is lazy reporting. That's the difference. It's so easy to just go with the crowd. The crowd says Tulsi Gabbard's a nutcase, so I'm going to write my piece and I'm going to put in there, yeah, she's a conspiracy theorist. All you have to do is go back and say, okay, let me find out what they're talking about. Let me research her. Let me see. But that's the problem we have in television today. We got lazy-ass reporters, like whoever the hell this woman is, who just filed a report. She probably spent about an hour and a half doing her makeup for her stand-up, and then she spent about a minute 15 or a minute and a half working on her piece. And that's how you get that kind of stuff. I'm sorry, but I'm just tired of it. Again, there's plenty to criticize with Tulsi Gabbard. There's plenty to criticize with Donald Trump. But don't do lazy reporting where you just go out and say, oh, he just announced this new person who's going to help the campaign. Her name is Tulsi Gabbard, and all I can say about her is she's a conspiracy nut. That's horrible. That's lazy. It's biased, and it shouldn't happen. So anyway,
You're pulling the curtain back. You're pulling the curtain back on The Wizard of Oz and how this TV stuff works, and you're absolutely right to criticize the reporter for just jumping the bandwagon instead of doing the critical work.
They're lazy.
Of being the opposite voice if it's needed.
They're lazy and nobody checks on them, and that's a problem. By the way, there's something else here at play. Democrats, who are suddenly very hawkish, as you pointed out, recruiting neocon Republicans over to their side, like former Congressman Adam Kinzinger, While Mr. Trump, ironically, is doing just the opposite. He's recruiting the anti-neocons, the anti-war Democrats like Kennedy and like Tulsi Gabbard, who we were just talking about. So here's Gabbard after she was introduced by Trump this weekend, and here she is explaining why she's supporting Donald Trump.
We saw this through his first term in the presidency, when he not only didn't start any new wars, he took action to de-escalate and prevent wars. He exercised the courage that we expect from our commander-in-chief in exhausting all measures of diplomacy, having the courage to meet with adversaries, dictators, allies, and partners alike in the pursuit of peace.
All right, now, while I just praised Tulsi Gabbard or defended her, now I'm going to criticize her. Because to be fair, well, the comparison of Trump and Biden, for example, and or Harris, is, I think, favorable for Trump when it comes to foreign policy in general, right? In general, her description of him, making him sound like he's some kind of Mother Teresa, who's like a peacenik or something, is, to say the least, a little bit overstated. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's fair to criticize Tulsi Gabbard as well. I mean, all of these candidates are imperfect in some aspect or another. But the question here is Trump the better choice on foreign policy? I mean, I don't know. Let's examine some of the key points to his first go-around in the Oval Office. No new wars, fact. But then he droned Iran's General Qasem Soleimani.
Which could have started a war. He assassinated a foreign leader.
Right.
I mean.
Right. Then he entertained the idea of withdrawing the U.S. from NATO. That's a fact. But then he wanted to withdraw U.S. troops from Syria, but, quote, steal the oil. Can't we steal the oil? That's also a fact.
Install the new president in Venezuela.
There's that. Then he says he likes and respects Vladimir Putin. Okay, great. He went out of his way to make nice with Kim Jong-un. But then he went and started a trade war with China. So depending on what your definition of what better on foreign policy means, I mean, better is, I guess, in the eye of the beholder, right?
You know what better is? Better is less worse. It's no longer who will do well, it's who will do the least amount of damage. And I would say,
yeah. I'm so sad.
Judging across the board with Mr. Trump and his policies, he probably, from a foreign policy standpoint, I would agree with Tulsi Gabbard that he would do less damage. But he's not Mother Teresa. And he's not sitting around sitting
less
kumbaya
worse.
In the White House. All right. Here's something that may be turning into a trend. Listen to this. Yet another country is now coming out today and saying it will no longer be supplying Ukraine with weapons. Poland, of all countries. Poland. I didn't see this coming, which used to be one of Ukraine's besties. I mean, they were like this, you know, frickin' frack. Literally one of their staunchest allies. Well, they're joining other countries now in the region, like Hungary and Slovakia, and saying, Ixay, nixay, no more weapons for you. There it is, media reports like this one by the BBC and the headline that reads, Poland no longer supplying weapons to Ukraine amid grain row, are quoting Poland's prime minister when he says his country will now focus on its own security rather than the security of Ukraine. The PM put out that statement right there. His name is Mateusz, Morawiecki. He's quoted as saying, we are no longer transferring weapons to Ukraine because we are now arming Poland with more modern weapons. By the way, the article also points out that the Polish government seems to have a real beef with Ukraine's Mr. Zelensky for something he said recently at the United Nations. So Zelensky goes to the United Nations, and apparently he badmouths those three countries, including Poland. Zelensky attacked Hungary, he attacked Slovakia, and he attacked Poland by making fun of them in a speech. Zelensky referred to the three nations as, quote, political theater, making a thriller from grain. Well, the Poles didn't like that. Apparently, they're so angry about what Mr. Zelensky said, they summoned the Ukrainian ambassador to Warsaw, where they then filed with him a formal complaint against Ukraine. Wow, Manila, what is this grain scuffle all about? Can you bring us up to date on this? What's going on?
Rick, I also got to wonder, did Zelensky open the UN talk by making like a how many Polish people does it take to screw in a light bulb?
No, he did not go there. I looked, he did not go there.
Okay, fair enough. But okay, look, Rick, remember all that talk about Ukraine being the so-called breadbasket of the world, even though they're actually a far, far distant second behind Russia? Remember all that talk?
Yeah, uh-huh.
That's really what all of this is actually about. And the Polish PM sort of accidentally let that slip when he said that Poland was no longer supplying Ukraine with arms. The president, Andrzej Duda, quickly swooped in, trying to clarify, saying, no, we just aren't giving Ukraine the new stuff, the new arms. Mm. And I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said, we're keeping the new stuff for ourselves, but we'll give Ukraine the old hand-me-downs from the old Soviet-era stuff. So this row between Ukraine and their neighbor really boils down to brass tacks over farming. Many countries in the EU are super angry over Ukrainian grain imports flooding their local domestic markets, driving down prices for domestically grown goods, much like we hear about here in the U.S., the influx of illegal migrants driving down wages.
So what you're saying is if you're a Polish farmer, the way you just described it, I'm sitting here working my butt off every day to try and grow this grain, and my government's saying, we don't need your grain. We're going to import cheap grain from Ukraine. And they're going, whoa, wait. How am I going to feed my family? And that's the pushback they're getting, right?
They were getting import tax breaks as well, whereas the local domestic farmers in the EU were not receiving that.
Yeah.
So the Ukraine grain was actually going to the market for a lot cheaper. And that's what drove those massive farmers' protests across the EU just a few months ago. The European Council had to respond by placing a temporary embargo on outside grain imports just to quell the farmer anger and stabilize out the pricing domestically. Now that ban has ended, but Poland, Hungary, and Slovakia have decided to continue with that embargo, and that's what Zelensky's mad about.
Got it.
Also, Ursula von der Leyen, and Zelensky is now having a fit and taking his complaint to the WTO. And then, Rick, as you alluded to, Poland is actually the second country to kind of issue mixed messaging following Germany's finance minister that we talked about last week, saying that there is no more money in the coffers for Ukraine while still cheerleading the efforts to continue the war. Get my drift, Rick?
Yeah, and I get it. And by the way, just to put it in the proper framework, because, you know, as an American who happens to come from Latin America, that's the same argument that a lot of Latin American farmers have been making for many years. The reason we have an immigration problem in the United States is because the economies of those countries, Honduras, Guatemala, Mexico, for years have been destroyed by American farming products, which are subsidized, and they pour them into Latin America, and they make some guy who used to grow tomatoes in Honduras, he's out of business. He's got no money. He can't live off of what he used to do. So what does he do? He comes to America because he's hungry and he wants to feed his family. You know, that subsidizing of certain services, what Poland and its farmers are feeling that is being done to them because of cheap grain from Ukraine, that's not the only place where this kind of thing is going on. It happens in different parts of the world. Unfortunately, the media never explains this. They'd just rather say that, you know, it's a big immigration problem, et cetera, et cetera. Fascinating
That's
stuff.
That's exactly
though.
It. Exactly it.
Well, thank you for taking us through it there, partner. I appreciate talking to you and seeing you, and I'll see you again very, very soon. Be good. When we come back, we're going to be joined by, somebody who's been on this show before, and he's got a lot to say. Craig Pasta-Giardula is going to join us from the great state of Florida. The great state of Florida? Really? I know that place. He's going to be talking about those pesky conspiracy theories. Stay right there. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez. So much to talk about, certainly when it comes to American politics. One of the things that's happening right now is this great debate that's going to take place. Great debate, I say, somewhat in jest, between the Vice President of the United States and the former President of the United States. And it's happening just as the President introduced some people that are going to be helping his campaign. Obviously, Bobby Kennedy Jr. and, of course, Tulsi Gabbard as well. Tulsi Gabbard's interesting. She's an interesting politician, to say the least. Craig Pastajardula joins us now to talk about this and a whole lot more. You know, Pasta, when I think of Tulsi Gabbard, I think of courage. Don't get too carried away. I'm not going to get carried away with this. Courage in the sense that she goes where almost no politician will go, and that is to examine and accurately criticize American foreign policy. And she does so, not so like some outsider who just comes in and says, you know, this is what I think of this. I mean, she actually served, so, you know, she has a little more gravitas when she talks about this. That's the good part about Tulsi Gabbard. Wouldn't you agree?
I would totally agree, and that's why I supported her in her campaign in 2020, and she gave us total access as independent journalists to get in there and ask her a lot of these important questions, Rick.
I didn't know that. I mean, as much as I've, you know, studied her and watched her, at times I think she's somewhat mishandled her own campaign at certain times, but there's no way you cannot look at this woman and see the things that she's done and said and not come away saying it takes a certain amount of courage to be able to do those things, because, you know, the forces that she's up against, they're omnipresent, strong, and even a little bit dangerous.
Yeah, I would also say that she has the courage to listen. You know, we had access to that campaign back in 2020, and a lot of people don't know this, but she provided an avenue which we could help her out for that debate. We honestly knew what was coming and that Kamala was the target that day, and we were able to create a dossier in which she was then able to be able to pick from to use in that debate. But I've always admired Tulsi for having an open door. Even when it's tough questions, she'll take them. There's a lot of things I don't agree with her on, but a lot of things I do agree with her on. But the courage to sit there and take those questions and to listen, you can't doubt or hold that against Tulsi, because she's always been an open book.
You just mentioned something that's very important. Bring our audience up to date. Those of us, you know, we got people watching from all over the world. She had this signature moment in a debate when she took on Harris, Vice President Harris.
She put over 1,500 people in jail for marijuana violations and then laughed about it when she was asked if she ever smoked marijuana. She blocked evidence. She blocked evidence that would have freed an innocent man from death row until the courts forced her to do so. She kept people in prison beyond their sentences to use them as cheap labor for the state of California. And she fought to keep cash bail system in place that impacts poor people in the worst kind of way.
And many to this day believe that was the moment when when Kamala Harris's campaign ended. She ended it right there on that day. Take us through that.
Well, you know, at the time in 2020, we were part of the media that was following her around. Every single time she had a rally or an event, she would always have a press gaggle. And then she would open up the doors to allow any journalist who walked into the room, ask her questions and whatnot. But at the same time, you know, she had taken a liking to a lot of us who would, you know, give her a lot of information. And she provided an avenue where she would hear the grievances about Kamala Harris and then use those against her in the debate. So that's what happened. We had created a dossier of sorts, and it was a bunch of independent journalists that filled that dossier and sent it over to her. I mean, she's big on research.
Let me help you, because I think, despite the fact that I'm older than you, I think I remember. Here's where she nailed her. She looked her in the eye, and she told her that despite the fact that she says that she's for justice and this and that and helping African Americans and other minorities, no prosecutor in the state of California has ever been worse when it comes to the punishment she doled out for young African Americans and other minorities who had done nothing more than smoked a marijuana cigarette. And she put them in jail for more than a year. And, you know, to be the only minority or African American supposedly as a candidate and to have done that doesn't look good. She killed her with that thing.
Yeah, and like I said, she was open to us to let her, you know, educate her on the situation. We were living in California at the time.
Yeah.
Me and my business partner, Fiorella Isabella from the Convo Couch. So we had a lot of information on Kamala Harris's history. I mean, there were so many other things that she could have just pivoted to go after Kamala. The fact that Kamala actually held prisoners longer of sentences to use for free labor. I mean, I think she did mention that one as well. So, I mean, she was open to understanding the people who have been watching and following Kamala for quite some time. And that's the great thing about Tulsi Gabbard. And I think you hit an interesting point, Rick. There are a lot of other things that we can be critical about you know, Tulsi Gabbard.
Right.
But this is the same old lazy reporting that you see from the mainstream media just to attack her as a conspiracy theory. Yeah. It's getting boring at this point.
Yeah. What do you, so the way that you present her as someone who was a bit of a pit bull and was able to take down, because she did. She essentially, not by herself, but she was a big part of taking down Kamala Harris when Kamala Harris was running for president. How then should Trump use her in his campaign? What do you expect her role might be?
That's a very interesting point because there's a lot of information there. Unfortunately, I think the Trump campaign has handicapped themselves in certain ways because they want to look tough on crime, right?
Yeah.
They have these new little sayings, immigrant crime and whatnot.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, they can't do or they haven't done. Maybe they will. Maybe Tulsi can break through to them. You have to attack Kamala Harris where she's at her weakest. And that's her record as a DA in San Francisco or an attorney general in California. So, I mean, I haven't even heard Donald Trump mention the First Step Act. I wish he would.
Mm-hmm.
But there is an opportunity here in this debate to really go after Kamala Harris and separate himself. But him and his campaign have to be willing to do it. And that includes not looking tough on crime. Because if they want to keep that image over there, they're going to handicap themselves from really attacking her at her weakest point. So I'm really hoping that Tulsi could break through and get that Trump campaign going.
Yeah, no, you're right. You can't come across as thinking or saying or implying or even suggesting that the only people who commit crimes in the United States or anywhere in the world are minorities, that it's only the immigrants, you know, who get DUIs, only black people who get DUIs. It just, you know, again, for Mr. Trump, as well as for Ms. Harris, they need the middle. And you don't get the middle by making negative assertions about any group, whether it's men or women or anybody else. So I agree with you, but you and I are not the campaign managers here. What do you make of this? This is interesting. I alluded to this at the beginning, but Manila and I didn't get a chance to talk about this. I am fascinated by this debate where Mr. Trump has agreed to the rules that were originally set for him and Mr. Biden. Now, it worked really well to shut off the microphones and then just let Biden make an absolute, you know, mess of himself because he was too old and he just didn't make any sense. But I think in this debate against Vice President Harris, it might favor Trump to have the microphone turned off as well because it keeps him from doing the thing that you and I were just talking about, making assertions about minorities, interrupting, which I think will again push back the middle, the independents. What do you think?
Yeah, Rick, I think you're exactly right. And I also want to tip my hat off to you for talking about the fact that a lot of these politicians, whether it be on the right or the left, don't talk about the actual causes of migration. What you were talking about, the tomatoes and Honduras, is so important because we never talk about why there are so many people coming to the border. But as far as this debate is concerned, yeah, I think that even though Kamala Harris is a little bit more alert and can find her way off the stage that Joe Biden couldn't do so,
correct,
she's still going to hang herself. We see her campaign right now shielding her from any interviews, any pushback, any press conference. So I think these rules are good and going to favor Donald Trump. It's once again how Donald Trump decides to go after the middle. And if he stays on this rhetoric where everything is so xenophobic, I think it's only going to hurt him.
Yeah.
I think you know, Rick, as well as anybody else. I mean, you're a Latin American guy living in South Florida, that most of the people that come here, especially the immigrants from Latin America, they're great citizens. They hide in the shadows. They don't commit crimes.
Right.
So this is a false narrative that they're pushing right now, and it's only going to hurt them. But when it comes to the debate, I think the plan is the same as it was when it was Joe Biden. Let the Democrats hang themselves. They have no ideas. They're just throwing out taglines, bumper sticker points, as they will. So I think the plan is the same, and I think it's going to favor Donald Trump. And hopefully he uses some of that Tulsi Gabbard juice in that debate.
If you were handling Mr. Trump and were his campaign manager, A, would you have the debate? Would you push for a second debate? And would you agree that it's best if they keep the microphones off, let one person make a statement, then they make a statement, then they make, you know, so it's not a back and forth thing? Who wins in a back and forth between those two? Have you thought about that?
Yes, I have. And the whole thing is whether the microphones are on or off. And I think it all depends on what the Kamala Harris campaign asked for. And whatever they ask for, let them do it. Because then if they fail in this debate, and I think they will, you can say, hey, listen, we played by her rules. We played on her ground, on her turf. This was what her campaign set up, and we still beat her. So I don't think there's going to be a second debate, Rick. I think after the first debate, the Kamala Harris campaign is going to run for the woods and never get in it again. They're going to try to shield their candidate as much as they can, like they have been from press conferences, debates, or any challenges. Here's
what I think, and I'll share it with you, because I like to look at the past to determine what's going to happen in the future. The last time they had a debate and they just let them freewheel, Trump got his butt handed to him. That's the debate he lost to Biden, where he kind of lost his you-know-what, and he started yelling at Biden and interrupting Biden. And he lost that debate because people saw him as too aggressive and almost mean. This last time, they didn't allow Mr. Trump to interrupt Biden or Biden to interrupt Mr. Trump, and Trump won that debate by half a mile. Now, you know, he was debating a guy who's, you know, in bad shape. But still, history tells me it's better if Trump is disciplined in a debate and not allowed to just go nilly-willy. 30 seconds, quick response.
You hit it on the nose. I mean, the fact is, when you can sit back there, allow that opponent to hang themselves, and I think that's something he learned from the first debate. The first debate, he was too much of an attack dog, and a lot of people were saying, just Trump, sit back, be quiet, let Joe Biden hang himself. I think you're going to see more of that going forward, because it was very successful on the first this debate with Biden, and we'll see a lot of that when it comes to Kamala.
Craig Pastajardula, my producers are saying we got to go. You and I are talking too much again. There you go, my friend. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, Rick.
Remember always to look outside your own box. Truth, they don't live in boxes, as we always say. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we'll be looking for you next time.